Okay, and just a couple of minutes after the hour, and we're ready to go. So, I hope you managed, if you were with us for the Simon Harrison call, that you managed maybe 10 or 15 seconds in nature. I went out with a cup of tea just into the garden just to have a look at a couple of roses, and then was chased back in by the rain. So, I'm hoping it's going to be a little better later. So, with our next class, we're going deep into the question of solitude as a way to open up our creative channels. And writing from your heart has always been for me about really connecting with what's waiting to emerge from you as a writer. And as far as solitude goes, I can think of nobody better to talk to you on that subject than my fellow spiritual explorer, Janet Connor. Hi, Janet.
Hello. Thank you. My favorite topic.
She nearly snapped my hand off when I suggested we could do this.
Yes.
So, just to remind you that our Facebook page is still active and that an email containing links for the recordings for today's masterclasses will go out after this class so that you can download and listen to them again at your pleasure. Welcome to all of you wherever you are, whatever time you're listening to this, whatever place in the world, and know that even though you listen on your own, you are connected to everybody else who's going through these master classes with us. In a moment, I'll introduce Janet more fully, but let's first draw together in our centering breath and remember the connections between us. Let's remember this is a sacred space that we're creating here. And be open to the truth that your inner voice will bring you as you listen deeply. So perhaps you'd like to again add a dimension to the breathing by saying on the in-breath, I am, and on the out-breath, present. So three deep, centering breaths. I always feel like when we've done that, I just am linked energetically with anybody who is going to listen either live or to the recording. So, let me introduce Janet Connor to you again. Janet is a vibrant teacher, writer, and speaker who became a catalyst for deep soul change after a series of personal traumas. Her landmark book, Writing Down Your Soul, published by Canary Press in 2009, connects readers to their extraordinary voice within and is consistently the number one book in the journal writing category on Amazon. Her second book, The Lotus and the Lily, cracks the abundance code by linking the wisdom of the inner voice with the surprise parallel teachings of Buddha and Jesus. In a profound yet simple 30-day program, Janet sheds radical new light on the great paradox of prosperity and guides readers to create the personal, perceptive conditions that nourish a beautiful life. Janet hosts a soul-directed life on Unity Radio, and this month it's on the call from the mystics. She lives in Ozona, Florida, and is fast becoming a major voice for spiritual understanding in our time. So again, welcome, Janet, and it's always a delight and honor to be with you.
Oh, thank you. It's a joy to be here and talking about a topic. It's so much more than a topic. Topic isn't the right word.
It is
a way of being, a way of being, a way of being that is so very dear to my heart. Many of you listening may have heard me before on our beautiful Writing from Your Heart symposium gathering that Eileen created last summer, or maybe you've taken some of my courses, but many of you are probably hearing me for the very first time. So I want to introduce you to what I'm going to do next. I have in front of me in my home, I'm writing to you from, I don't call it my writing office, I call it my writing chapel. I'm speaking to you from my writing chapel here in a little town on the Gulf of Mexico in Florida. And I am looking with love at one of my most precious, I can't call it a possession, it possesses me, I do not possess it. It is a Tibetan bowl. And it is very plain. As I learned when once I set out to welcome a Tibetan bowl into my life, I learned that a true bowl is very, very plain, and it is imperfect because it is hammered by hand. And so it is unembellished. And I love this so much because when I invite it to ring, to sing to us, it invites everyone listening to listen and listen deeply. And that's what we're going to do for the next hour. Listen, not to me. I'm simply going to share ideas and stories and quotes. But whatever words come out of me, they're going to enter, if they're meant to, your heart. And you're going to listen to the truth of them, not with your ears, but with your heart. And so I invite you to listen and listen deeply from the center of your heart to the call of the Tibetan bowl. She'll just keep singing and singing and singing, even as probably for 2 or 3 minutes. I love that. It is a call to go inside. It is a call to listen. It is a call to solitude. And I now start every single course, the radio show, everything begins with the call of the Tibetan bowl. And then the second thing I love to do to help people enter into the depth of the experience that we're about to have is to read to you some invitations from true masters. Not from me, but from mystics, writers, divine beings, saints. And I want to begin with Kafka. Because John Updike said that Kafka is, quote, the last holy writer, the last holy writer. So listen to what Kafka said. Just learn to be quiet, still, and solitary, and the world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. Take that in again. Just learn to be quiet, still, and solitary, and the world will freely offer itself to you to be unmasked. It has no choice. It will roll in ecstasy at your feet. No wonder he's a holy writer. We are still rolling in ecstasy at his feet, trying to figure out. No one has replicated Kafka. So if you want to write from the heart, and if you want to bring to the world something healing, something holy, something that makes a difference, well, Kafka did it. And how? By being quiet, still, and solitary. Rumi put the same thing in a different way, in a very Rumi way. And Rumi, along with Hafez, these two are probably considered to be the greatest poets that ever lived or ever will live. Rumi said, "The inspiration you seek is already within you. Be silent and listen." Take that in again. The inspiration you seek is already within you. And of course, Eileen and I would say, where in you? Why, in your heart. In your heart. In your heart. If it's going to come out of you and bless the world, it's going to come when you write from your heart. So here's Rumi again. The inspiration you seek is already within you. Be silent and listen. And one last from my dear love, John O'Donohue, and his great, great book, Anamkara. He's talking in a chapter on music, and he quotes a conductor. He says, the wonderful conductor, Sergiu Celibidache. And I confess, I have no idea who Sergiu Celibidache is. But listen to the quote. We do not create music. We only create the conditions so she can appear. So if we substitute writing, we do not create what we write. We only create the conditions so she can appear. Well, how do you create those conditions? Number one is solitude. So I'd like to share with you my thoughts, and then please, on the Facebook discussion group, let's hear all of yours, because by no means am I handing you the complete story. Here's what Janet said about solitude, and that's it. We're done. That's the conversation. No, these are just ideas to get you to go inside, get you to be still, and you will become the next master class teacher on solitude, and you may have nuances and insights and ideas about solitude that far exceed anything I'm going to share with you today.
Janet, before you move on, could I just say we have guests with us on the webcast, so if anybody wants to pose a question, if you type it into the box on your webcast page, and I'll check later on towards the end of the program and see if anybody has offered a question or a thought or a comment.
Oh, okay. I love that, because then it's a live, vibrant conversation.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you set it up that way. Thank you. So here's what we're going to do. I will talk about solitude, and I'm going to begin with how solitude follows all of the, in every culture, the four phases of initiation. I'll do that quickly and then get into some meat about solitude. We're going to talk about what is it, and I'll give you a little hint right up. It's a paradox. Everything divine is a paradox. Talk about why it's so important, really non-negotiable in my book, the gifts of solitude, and contrasting the price. Oh, yeah, there's a price. And you must pay it, and you must pay it with your whole heart in order to receive those gifts. How do you create solitude? What happens in there, in that space of solitude? And then I'll leave you with the key factor, the one thing standing between you and all the gifts of solitude. So let me begin with how solitude follows, mirrors this cultural, cross-cultural, every tradition in its own form, talks about these four phases. If you look at a labyrinth, let's just visualize a labyrinth in your mind. A labyrinth is an initiation process. Solitude is an initiation process. If you want to become the spiritual writer, the spiritual warrior that you're here to be, you've got to go through this initiation process. So visualize a labyrinth. First, you step into the labyrinth. Well, this is step one in the initiation process. You are separating yourself from the ordinary, from the busy, from your go-go, your obligations, your ordinary world. And then you start walking. You are entering fully into this separated experience as you allow it. You know how in a labyrinth it winds and it weaves, and if you try in your conscious mind to figure out where are we going, you can't, because it turns and it twists in ways that don't make logical sense. You have to let go and simply let it carry you into the center. So that's entering into that separated experience. Then finally you get to the center, where you're one with the one. You're, if it were a mandala, which of course the labyrinth is, the divine is always the center dot in the labyrinth, in the mandala. Well, it's at the center that now you're available, because you have separated yourself from your busy, ordinary world, and you have followed the guidance to go in and in and in. So now at the center, you receive something. In the silence, you always receive a little dot of wisdom, a little blessing, something, some sort of gift. Well, now you've got to turn. You can't stay in the center forever. You've got to turn and return to the world, but now you're carrying something. You're carrying the gift you received. You're carrying the gift for the world. So those are the four stages of solitude. Number one, we're going to separate ourselves from the ordinary. Your ordinary life is not a life of solitude. You're going to enter into that silent, sacred space and allow it to carry you, where you will finally receive the gifts of solitude. And then, writing from your heart, we got to get back out there and bring these gifts into the world. So, what is solitude? Hold that vision of the labyrinth and those four phases in your mind. Maybe when we are finished, get out a labyrinth, a finger labyrinth, wander your finger along it, and notice just how sacred and holy those four phases are. So what is solitude? I find that anything that's sacred is a paradox. I just find myself constantly wrestling with paradox. And what is a paradox? A paradox are two things that appear to be opposite that are true at the same time. So your conscious brain cannot solve a paradox. And that's why paradox is so holy, and paradox is the way the divine communicates with us. Because if we're looking to connect the dots A to B to C to D, I can figure this out. My left brain can. A, you're never going to be a writer. Your left brain is not the writer in you. Your left brain might be the editor. You might need her to pop up and help you edit and to help you market and all those good things. But your left brain is not the writer. So what is the paradox of solitude? The paradox of solitude is that solitude is not solitary. You know, take that one in. Wait a minute. We're talking about solitude. Solitude certainly sounds like you're drawing away, you're alone. But as you discover, when you get to that inner space, oh my goodness, solitude is so not solitary. Because when you're alone, your guides and your guardians and your teachers and the great writer in the sky, I mean, everybody, it's a crowd in there. But that crowd has not been able to talk to you until you step away and enter the labyrinth of solitude. So if the word solitude has ever held you at bay because it seems like, it's lonely and, oh no, there's a party going on. Solitude is not solitary. Here's another paradox. When you chase great writing, you cannot reach it. So the harder you chase after it, the further it runs away from you. And what do we want? We want great writing. So how does great writing come? And it comes. That's the verb. It comes to you. When you stop chasing it, it can finally say, hello, dear, here I am, be still, let's write together. So it's that great saying in the Bible, be still, and know that I am. And you don't have to substitute God in any kind of dogma or theology into that phrase. If you just want to say the great writer, you know, the writer, the writer in the sky, the great writer. Well, same thing. Be still. Be still, my dear, and know that I am. And I am in you, with you, through you. But the only way that great writer can communicate with us is when we stop chasing her. So there's paradox number two. So how are we going to enter into this paradoxical relationship with solitude? Well, it's very simple. We simply have to create a space. We simply have to create a space, as that musician, that great conductor said. You don't create the music. You allow the space in which the music can sing for herself. So why is this so important? Let me start there before we get into the hows. Why is solitude essential? Well, for that, I'm reaching out and grabbing a little book that has made such a difference in my life. It's by Henry Nouwen, N-O-U-W-E-N. And Henry Nouwen is considered by many to be one of the greatest spiritual teachers that ever walked this earth. He wrote the guy wrote a gazillion books, and I have them all. I once resolved, I think it was 1998, to read every word that Henry Nouwen had ever written. It didn't quite make it, but I came close. But if you really want to capture everything he said in one tiny, how many pages is this thing? It's not even 100 pages. The little book is called The Way of the Heart, Desert Spirituality and Contemporary Ministry. So he's writing it for ministers, but never mind that. I mean, never mind that. This is for us. It has three chapters. Solitude is number one. Solitude is number one. Number two is silence, and number three is prayer. If you want to become a holy writer, those are the three things. That's the recipe. Solitude, silence, and prayer. And he talks about solitude as the furnace where transformation takes place. And he's speaking here to people trying to be ministers, but we're trying to be writers, which is a ministerial service to the world. The entire point of the people who want to play here with writing from the heart is that we want to write something that makes a difference, that transforms the world. So he says, just look for a moment at our daily routine. We're very busy people. We have meetings to attend, visits to make, services to lead. Our calendars are filled with appointments. Our days and weeks are filled with engagements. Our years are filled with plans and projects. Isn't every single word I just said true of every single one of us? There is seldom a period in which we do not know what to do, and we move through life in such a distracted way that we do not even take the time to rest and wonder if any of the things we think, say, or do are worth saying, thinking, or doing. We simply go along with the many musts and oughts that have been handed to us. And that, of course, has been my experience. I just keep doing what I think I have to do, and it's solitude that pulls us away from all of that compulsive behavior and gives us all the precious gifts so that we can become, like Kafka, a holy writer. What happens in solitude is that you finally make yourself available in the theta brainwave state. Anybody who has listened to any of my courses, taken Writing Down Your Soul, participated in anything I teach, in the end, it's always, always, always about entering the theta brainwave state. If you're in the beta brainwave state, that's where you worry and you're 100% in your left brain. The brain people, not Janet, the brain scientists have clearly stated that in the beta brainwave state, you cannot solve a problem and you have no access to creativity or breakthrough thinking. And yet, if you look at your busy life, the life that Henry Nouwen just described, you're in beta almost all the time. The second brainwave is alpha. And in alpha, you can do self-reflection and you can do some lovely work. You can do good work, but you don't have access to breakthrough thinking and true creativity, which is, of course, what every writer wants. The brain people have indicated there's only one brainwave in which you have access to all that delicious, juicy creativity, and that is the theta brainwave state. Well, in our busy go-go lives, we're not walking around in theta. So solitude gives us the opportunity to step out of that go-go, out of all that obligation, and access the theta brainwave state. That's why solitude is absolutely essential for the writer. Because if you don't have access to theta, you may produce something that's okay, but all it is a mirror of what's already out there. And any publisher will tell you, when you reach the point where you're trying to get published, the agent doesn't want to talk to you if you don't have something fresh and new. The publisher doesn't want anything to do with you if you don't have something fresh and new. Well, how are you going to come up with something fresh and new? In the Theta Brainwave state, where you have access to true creativity and breakthrough thinking. So if you've been wondering why you're on this call and whether or not you really want to play the solitude game, there you go. You're not going to have anything that a publisher is interested in until you have stepped deep into that labyrinth of solitude and received the rare and precious gifts at the center. Now you come up with something to write. Now you come up with a fresh idea. And now you come out with something that an agent wants and a publisher wants and that readers want and that you are thrilled to present to the world. So the gifts of solitude. Number one, you step out of the fear and the noise. And what happens when we step out of the fear of the noise? Exactly what just happened in our deep breathing with Eileen. These are all the gifts of meditation. Your heart rate slows down. Depression goes down. Joy goes up. It's healthier. All those gifts of meditation are the gifts of solitude. That's sort of like the ground of being in which all these juicy things can now happen. There is a sense of well-being. So that's what we want, right? Because it's nerve-wracking. Oh, my God, I got a deadline. I got to write something. What am I going to write? Bah, 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 bah. When you step into solitude and you step into that connection, there's such a sense of well-being because you know you're connected with your divine purpose. You know you're connected with the, I always just jokingly call her the writer in the sky. Well, when you have that sense of connection in the theta brainwave state, you're just washed with a sense of peace and at the same time a sense of energy. Once again, it's a paradox. You hang out with me, it's going to be a paradox. There's just that beautiful, oh, of course, that's what I want to write about. Oh, yes! And there is this magical flow. This is the great, great gift. In my summer course on creativity for writers called Plug-In for Writers, it's called Plug-In because we plug into what I call the intersection. The intersection is the overlap of your craft of writing and all your spiritual practices. And when visualize two circles overlapping and you've got a vesica Pisces, well, if you can get that vesica Pisces bigger, 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 as the overlap gets greater, 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 and your spiritual practice and the craft of writing become one, the two circles practically overlap, you have made yourself totally open to this outrageous flow that's just coming to you without you calling for it, without you trying to control it, without you trying to manage it. You just do what that conductor said, create the space, and the music, the writing will flow to you, whoa, until you have to say, whoa, okay, that's enough, whoa, let me write what you gave me, whoa. There is such a, it's magical, the flow that is available to you. So when people ask me what I do about writer's block, I just laugh. I have no idea what they're talking about, none. If you work in the intersection where your spiritual practice and your craft of writing become one and the same, your hands are basically released and let go and given to the divine writer, the holy writer, your divine purpose, whatever you want to call that, the flow is endless. It's magical. You'll never want to write any other way because the other way is hard. You just become an organ. You're a receptive organ. And the great writer in the sky will take over your hand on the page and on the computer, and you'll write something that you read later. It just happens to me all the time. I reread my books and go, God, this is good. Who wrote this? Wow. I catch myself underlining and say, I got to remember this. And it's almost like I have to look at my name on the cover and say, really? I wrote this? Well, no. I mean, yes and no. Paradox again. I simply made myself available and served my purpose to use words to connect spirit with the light. That's my purpose. My sacred purpose is to use words to connect you, people, to the light. And consequently, because you're hand-in-hand with this sacred purpose, with this creative flow in Theta, with this divine writer, you have such confidence. You have such confidence. And you have such trust. So that when you put it together and you put together your proposal and you send it to the agent and you send it to the publisher, you know, and you know that you know, this writing is important. And so when people worry about the marketing piece, oh my God, there's nothing to worry about. Because you know, I've been asked by the divine to get this out there. You will be thrilled to get it out there. And it'll carry such energy. I've heard stories of agents and publishers looking over at everything in the pile. What are they called? Slush pile. And one out of the 50 things, one at the bottom is glowing. And they grab it and say, well, let me read this one. Let me take this one home. That's that holy energy flowing onto the page and attracting the agent and the writer, the publisher. So you create this open space in which divine thoughts and grace, you just make yourself available, and you will be taken care of, and you will produce something that the publisher actually wants because it's fresh and it's new and it's divinely guided. So those are the gifts. They sound pretty good. What's the price? And there is a price. Number one, the people around you. I would like to say may not like it, but I'm afraid I have to say aren't going to like it. They're not going to like it. Because you're pulling away. If you want to get a sense of that, the book for you is Listening Below the Noise by Anne LeClaire. And she decided one day that she was going to be silent on Mondays. And she's married, and she has clients. But she decided in order to do the work that she's here to do, she needed to be completely silent on Mondays. The first person to complain was her husband. What do you mean? You know, what am I supposed to say to people when they call? And he whined 3 years later. She still is always silent on Mondays, and he's still whining. So I'm sorry, the people around you are not going to like it. Mary Oliver has a poem that describes this beautifully. Listen, I'm sure you know it, The Journey by Mary Oliver. One day you finally knew what you had to do and began, though the voices around you kept shouting their bad advice through the whole house, and you felt the old tug at your ankles, mend my life, right? That's the people. The people in your classes, your coaching, your family, your kids, your friends, your neighbors. No, take care of me. Mend my life. I need you to do this. I need you to do that. Mend my life, each voice cried. But you didn't stop. You knew what you had to do. Though the wind pried with its stiff fingers at the very foundations, though their melancholy was terrible, it was already late enough. Yeah, it's late enough in life. And a wild night and the road full of fallen branches and stones. But little by little, as you left their voices behind, so visualize stepping into that labyrinth of solitude, the stars began to burn through the sheets of clouds, and there was a new voice, that's the voice we want, which you slowly recognized as your own, that kept you company as you strode deeper and deeper into the world, determined to do the only thing you could do, determined to save the only life that you could save. And that's your life as a writer. So the price of solitude is you have to step away and you have to ignore all those voices that say, no, take care of me. Now here's another price. When you step into that silence, when you step into that solitude, when you no longer have all those distractions around you, you're not watching TV, you're not listening to the radio, you're not on the computer, you're alone in your backyard, you're sitting alone under a tree, and now you are available. Well, here's what's going to happen. There's no longer a place to hide, and you're going to meet yourself, and you may not, at first, like what you see. You may enter into what St. John of the Cross so exquisitely called the dark night of the soul. Don't let that scare you. That's the healing place. That's the sacred place. That's the holy place. If you didn't hear Mirabai Star on my show, The Soul Directed Life on Unity FM, the first Thursday, June 6th of this month, The Call from the Mystics, go and listen to it. They're available in the archives. Just go to unity.fm, and then on the right-hand side you could see all the shows, and it's The Soul Directed Life, so look in alphabetical order till you get to it, and then scroll down through the podcast to June 6th, because she talks about what happened when her daughter, her 14-year-old daughter, was killed in an accident. And she said, when you're cracked open and stripped naked. Now, this doesn't sound like fun, right? But this is what can happen in the solitude. I would go so far as to say it's what should happen in the solitude. When you are cracked open and stripped naked, that's when the communion with the divine purpose, with your soul's purpose, when you meet the story you're here to share, that's where it takes place. So far the prices don't sound too good. Number one, everybody you live with and are surrounded with, they're annoyed with you. And number two, you might find that when you meet yourself at the soul level, when you meet the life, when you really look at the life you have created so far, you might say, oi, this isn't making me happy. Stay there. Stay there. And I'll tell you why you want to stay there. Listen to what Meister Eckhart said. And Meister Eckhart, along with Hildegard and Julian of Norwich, may be the three greatest, in the Christian tradition, the three greatest mystics who ever lived. Now, listen to this. It's a poetic translation by Matthew Fox of a teaching of Meister Eckhart. No one has studied Meister Eckhart like Matthew Fox. There, where clinging to things ends. So visualize you sitting in the backyard. You're alone by yourself. You're being fed and spoken to by the gifts of nature. The sun is on your shoulders. Those are all the precious and holy and good support that you have around you. But clinging to things is now ending. It's not about the conversations, and it's not about what you're supposed to be doing. Okay, all of that clinging, even to what you want. Let go, let go, let go. There, where clinging to things ends, is where God begins to be. Now listen to his simple metaphor. If a cask is to contain wine, well, that's what we want, right? We want to have the gorgeous wine of the beautiful book, the beautiful speech, the beautiful whatever. If a cask is to contain wine, you must first pour out the water. The cask must be bare and empty. Therefore, if you wish to receive divine joy in God, first pour out your clinging to things. Everything that is to receive must and ought to be empty. So the price of solitude, but it's also the gift. Ah, welcome. Paradox. More paradox. The price of solitude is that you get empty. And at that center space of that emptiness, it might seem dark. It might seem difficult, but it's not, because the divine is rushing in to fill that space, and your cask will fill, not with just water, but with wine. The wine of writing. And great writing does leave you so high. I mean, wine really is the perfect metaphor. When I've finished a day of writing, I'm ecstatic. Well, I'm ecstatic because I've spent the day in the theta brainwave state. And I'm just, I dance around here, I sing around here, I'm always hooting and hollering and just having a grand old time. The wine of writing is glorious. Okay, the first price is people around you aren't happy. The second price is you're meeting yourself and creating this sacred empty space. Number three, now I think this is the gift, but things are going to change. when that writer in the sky, when your holy purpose, when everything is flowing into you, how can you possibly stay the same? When you become a servant of that creative flow in the intersection, and the people in my course, it's a 9-week course in the summer, Plug In for Writers, they always come away, whoa, my purpose has changed, what I write about has changed, the premise of my book has changed, but now I have an agent, now I have a contract, now I have a radio show. I mean, things change. So if you're wanting to control your writing, you know, you might want to hang up. This class is not for you. If you want to stay in your left brain and just create something safe, okay, this is not for you. But if you want to be the holy writer like Kafka and create something new and something that changes the world and something that gives you, makes you high on the ecstasy of being a writer, then you want to pay all those prices. I think those prices are the gifts. It's almost like a paradox. The price is the gift, and the gift is the price. So how can you create it? How can you experience it? Well, there's two different ways. One is the habit, and that's what we talk about in Plug In for Writers. How can you just create these habits all the time? And then there is that sort of special moment that, and eventually they do become one and the same. But you can do it once, step into the labyrinth once, and just say, well, ooh, that was fun. But I would hope that experience makes you want to then create a space in your day, in your week, in your month, and in your year, so that solitude is a habit. The first thing is to set your intention, to set your intention to be available, to be receptive, to be willing to use the information that comes through. And so you set your intention simply by holding a thought, maybe visualizing your third eye being open, your heart being open, your hand being open. Doesn't matter how you do it, but the universe is run on intention. We know this from quantum physics. So number one, set your intention. Number two, as that labyrinth metaphor indicates, you've got to step away from your busy world. And Greg Lavoie in Callings describes this, I think, particularly beautifully. He calls it a media diet. And I harp on this in every single one of my courses. You've got to turn off the computer. You've got to turn off the television. You've got to step away from your iPad. Put it down. Don't listen when you go for a walk. Just go for a walk. You've got to step away from all that media. Listen to what he says. This is Callings, a great book, by the way. If you're not certain about what you've been called to do, this book is for you, Greg Lavoie. In a move that then seemed scandalous to virtually everyone I knew, and even to myself, I stopped reading the daily newspaper entirely, stopped listening to the radio, canceled all 8 of my magazine subscriptions. I entered a kind of seclusion from story, a hermitage from the news, and practiced a kind of media celibacy. To my great astonishment, I maintained this fast for years. And then he goes to talk about what happens when you detox. You become available, he says, to a different kind of news, the news from inside. And I accidentally, I didn't do it intentionally, or I didn't do it consciously intentionally, I did exactly this. I was in Oaxaca, Mexico for the first time taking a group of deep soul writers. I do it once a year, take people on a trip. And the first trip was to Oaxaca, Mexico. And this was 2010. And I found we had no television, no radio, no news, no nothing. There wasn't Wi-Fi in our rooms, and it was too expensive to even, you know, use your long-distance phone. So we were, for 10 days, completely separated. And every single one of us began to talk about, wow, now we understand what Eckhart's Tolle's talking about with this now, be in the now, the power of now. Finally, we understood it at a very visceral level. We were only available to what we were eating, what we were experiencing, where we were going, to one another. We were completely present. So I walked back in my hotel room, I picked up a pen, and in deep soul writing I said, dear God, help me hold on to this when I get home. Now, you know, I should have known that the universe always, always responds to what I say in deep soul writing. When I came home, my television was broken. So I called the cable company and I said, well, get it out of here. It's been 3 years, if you want to do one thing to augment your writing life, remove your television. And if that's too scary, I can see your eyebrows going up right now, what? Then at least do this. No television in the morning. Do not start your day with all the dreadful news of the day. And absolutely, absolutely no television at night. If you have a television in your bedroom, get it out of there. So monitor what you watch and when you watch it. Do not take the fear of the day, because you do understand the news is nothing but fear. I can say that because I worked for CNN. My husband was the first director of field operations for CNN. I lived with news, 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 news. First local news at KTVU in Oakland, California, where my husband was a videographer, and then with CNN. The news is intended to do nothing but disseminate fear, so that then you're afraid and you'll watch it some more. So if you're going to keep your TV, at least monitor it very, very, very carefully, and never, never watch the late night news before you go to bed. Be very careful what holy thoughts you take with you. Don't take fear to bed with you. So a media diet is essential. Silence, as Henry Nouwen tells us. Solitude, silence, and prayer. Silence is essential. So that means get that iPod out of your ears. When you're in the car, turn off the radio. Once you realize, just do sort of an audit. When am I alone with my own thoughts? And when during the day am I allowing external stuff to come into me? You will be shocked at the television and the computer and the radio. Put yourself on a media diet. Do it for 1 week. Do it for 1 week. And I think I can safely guarantee you'll never go back. Go out in nature. I heard you say that was the great teaching of the hour before. And there is nothing like it. But go for a walk alone. Alone. And no iPod. iPad. Be in nature and allow nature to be your companion. Allow the nature gods and goddesses to speak to you. Go to sacred places. This is why we go on retreats, right? I'm very blessed that I live 10 minutes south of Tarpon Springs, and there's a beautiful little shrine, not a shrine created by any kind of church, but a shrine that a Greek family created when their son was miraculously healed at the age of 11 by Michael the Archangel. So they created this adorable handmade, you know, when people have healings, they leave a gift and they slap these icons on the wall. It's little, and the second you walk in, you know you're in holy ground. Well, that's my download spot. Every course, the outline for every single course, the directions to teach the courses, instructions on my books. The last time I was there, worried about my son, they gave me the perfect prayer. The perfect prayer. And you know what? It is a perfect prayer. It's a perfect prayer. Well, I didn't come up with that. It was handed to me with my hand in motion in St. Michael's Shrine. Now, for you, your sacred place might be the side of a river. It might be your grandmother's grave. It doesn't have to be anything that's connected in any way with any kind of tradition. But, you know, in my case, it does have a Greek Orthodox kind of connection, even though it's not a Greek Orthodox sanctioned place. But I love it. And of course, Michael the Archangel. Every single tradition on the planet talks about the angels. So things that have to do with the angels are not, even if they're being presented as being connected with any kind of church, they're not. So find a sacred space. And of course, create your own sacred writing space yourself. When I put myself in my sacred writing chair and I say my blessing, my blessing is in the front of the soul writing, my first soul writing journal called My Soul Pages. My blessing is in there. I create, that's a vortex spot. That's holy ground. So you don't have to go anywhere. You can do it and should do it. Create your own sacred space in your home where you do your prayers and your deep soul writing. Create an altar in your home. These are all things that we talk about in Plugin for Writers. And make sure that you stay alone. Sorry, but solitude isn't alone. So even if you have a very intimate, very loving, very precious relationship with someone, solitude means solitude. And feed yourself. So Lectio Divina is the way of reading sacred texts, and you can read about that. There are many, many great books. But I basically stumbled upon my own way of Lectio Divina. Seeing as I don't have a television, I found that I, just having no television, you'd be astonished. I mean, three or four, not that I was watching a lot of TV, but it's amazing how much time you have. So I do still get the newspaper, but I don't read it first thing in the morning because I don't want that. Instead, I sit, I always joke and I say to John O'Donohue or Kabir Helminski, who's going to have breakfast with me? And I get my coffee and I sit down and I read something that's sacred to me right now. What am I reading right now? And right now, the people, you can always, anytime you want to pick up anything by John O'Donohue, and you can only read a paragraph or two because it's so rich. It is so rich. Seeds of Contemplation by Thomas Merton, The Naked Now by Richard Rohr. You don't turn the page, turn the page, turn the page. So what I do is I just read a paragraph or two, and I find something that's really speaking to me. I stop, I say it out loud, and then I just stare out the window, and I allow those words. I might say it out loud over and over, or I might just think it over and over, and I allow those words to feed me, to enter me. That's Lectio Divina, except, you know, there are more official ways of doing it, but that's a way to feed yourself. If you are not best friends with the mystical poets, for heaven's sakes, come be friends with the mystical poets. They got it, and they're able to speak to us from any tradition and any century, and they all say the same thing. They do, all in the end, all say the same thing. If you want proof of that, come to my radio show this Thursday. We're concluding the month of the Call from the Mystics with a mystical poetry love fest of Daniel Ladinsky's translations of 12 different mystics in a beautiful book called Love Poems from God. And that's a great...
Hello? Oh, I'm not quite sure what's happened. I think Janet has disappeared for some reason. I'm not exactly sure why. We'll just wait for a second and see if she dials back in. She was giving us some absolutely wonderful, wonderful blessings in that talk. She mentioned quite a few books. I don't know if you've come across them. The Anamkara. Janet introduced me to Anamkara earlier in the year, and it is beautiful Celtic writing. And as she says, there is you can only read a very small amount of it. Oh, there you are, back.
Well, it just suddenly I heard like a disconnected. I went, oh.
I've just been filling in for you, Janet, just talking about...
Isn't that so interesting and so bizarre? So, where was I? Because that really did get my attention.
Yeah, you just were talking about Lectio Divina.
Lectio Divina. Okay. Woo. Oh, yeah. And that this Thursday we're going to simply read mystical poetry to one another. It is a delicious... doesn't have to be that particular book, but I highly recommend, instead of watching TV at night, have a book of mystical poetry, have Mary Oliver, have David White, have Rumi, have Hafez beside you. Take those thoughts. Let the last thing you read to yourself that you speak out loud or take into your heart be something like that when you go to bed. Then be alone in your home. Now, for those of you that have a house full of people, sometimes the shower might be the only place. But, hey, the shower is an incredible place. My publisher calls it the phone booth to God. So find a time when you can be alone, even if you're surrounded by family. one of the richest things you can do is to let yourself stay in bed for even 5 or 10 minutes in the morning, because you're still in the natural theta brainwave state. Everybody is just naturally, sleep is delta, and so before you can get into the rush of life, those faster brainwaves, your brain, your body will naturally. But what we have a tendency to do is jump out of bed and go do the things that need to be done. And we're bypassing this exquisite gift, this unbelievable magic that's handed to us every single morning. And writers, it's non-negotiable, please. Even if you have to wake up to an alarm because you've got to get your third grader to school, or you have a job you have to get to, set the alarm a tad earlier, even just 10 minutes. And when it goes off, just reach out and hit that pause button. But here's the secret. Don't sit up. Don't turn on the lights. Don't open your eyes. Don't move. Lie perfectly still. And that may mean telling the person who's in bed with you, I know this is strange, dear, but for the next month, I'm going to run this little experiment. And so when the alarm goes off, would you be so kind as to silently get out of bed, and then you just lie there. At first, you're going to feel like an idiot, but very quickly, you will be stunned at the information that comes to you. Your dreams return to you, and the meaning of your dreams return to you. Ideas. I get the title of all my books like this. So I'm now a totally trained writer. I train myself to stay in the theta brainwave state as much as humanly possible. And I lie in bed sometimes for half an hour, sometimes more. All my newsletters, everything I'm going to write about, everything just comes to me. It's just handed to me on a silver platter. And so you can create alone time in the shower, in the car. Oh, yeah. All you got to do is turn off the radio. I get huge downloads in the car. And if you're worried about remembering them, just say them out loud. Say them out loud. I do always have a notepad next to me in the car, too. And you have to, you know, write without looking down. Not paragraphs here, but just a phrase, maybe two words. But it's enough that when you get where you're going, you will have that trigger to go back. So I do not accept it when somebody says, I can never be alone. You can be alone in the bathroom, you can be alone in the shower, you can be alone in the car, you can be alone first thing in the morning, you can be alone last thing at night. You can tell the family, I'm going in my sacred writing room right now and I'd like to be alone for 30 minutes. Oh, yes, you can. You can and you must create time to be alone. It's a gift you must give yourself. And then you can schedule-less days. Give yourself a week, a vacation from your crazy life, your writing life. I did this for the first time in 2009. My book had just come out. It had been about 6 or 7 months. I think it was July. And I was frantically trying to make it a success and catch up. And my publicist, advisor, Jennifer Hill Robinault, the most sacred publicist on the planet, and she is a guest expert in plug-in for writers. She called me one day and yelled at me. And she said, Janet, turn off the computer right now and leave it off for 5 days. And I finally took her advice. She had to scream at me for several days before I did it. What a holy time. I locked the door to this office. I took some books I wanted to read, went downstairs, stayed away. I did not enter this room for 5 days. Actually, I loved it so much, I extended it to 7. And it was the richest, most glorious. So I had a retreat, but I had it staying at home. So it cost me nothing. When I came upstairs and turned the computer back on, I had 22 invitations to speak and write. Got that? You can and you must schedule unscheduled time in your day, in your week, in your month, and in your year. And then a last thought, particularly when I'm getting ready to do some very precious writing, I sit on the floor and I play the Gandharva Experience, a CD by Tom Kenyon. You can get it at his website, Tom Kenyon, KENYON.com. And in it, he uses his 5-octave voice to call in the angels and saints and divine beings of every tradition on the planet. You talk about holy. I mean, the room is vibrating. As I said, solitude is not solitary. I always honor and sanctify my new project by sitting alone on the floor. It's only 12 minutes long, but that brings in all of the support that I need. That's an exquisite way to create sacred space. But you can also simply walk into your room and say a little blessing. You can walk into your room and ring your Tibetan bowl or ring a little bell. You know, sacred sound is a good thing. Doesn't matter how you do it. The point is you sanctify the space. You create the space where the gifts of solitude can flow to you. So what happens in there? I think you know. The flow comes. Ideas come. Joy comes. Your writing instructions come. You're simply available. Your job is to just say yes and do it. That's it. I hope you are clearly hearing that when you engage in solitude and you make that solitude sacred and you make yourself available to the divine writer, the holy writer, the one writer, then you will receive what you are here to write, and you will be asked to give birth to it, and your job is just to give birth to it. Writing becomes easy. I never wonder, what am I going to write about? Good heavens. I have the opposite problem. I have to say, okay, boys and girls, you've given me 12 ideas. Hello, I can write one book right now. So pick, will you? What's it going to be? So I want to leave you with one last thought. What is standing between you and this delicious gift of writing? Do you know? What word comes to mind? It's one word. What word pops in your mind right now? What is standing between you and living this glorious, sacred, creative writing life? One word. Trust. You got to trust. You got to trust that this is your soul's purpose. You've got to trust that the divine writer is waiting for you. You've got to trust that your unconscious mind is holding and waiting for you incredible gifts. You've got to trust that your soul knows why you're here and cannot wait to partner with you to bring that sacred purpose to life. You've got to trust that the inspiration and the intuitions and the messages are all waiting for you. You've got to trust that the intersection is real. That when your spiritual practice and your dedication to the craft of writing merge, you will become a holy writer, like Kafka. Kafka is not. John Updike was wrong about one thing. Kafka is not the last holy writer. You are, or I should say, you're the next, the next holy writer. We're all called to be holy writers, and we wouldn't be hanging out with Eileen Parr if we didn't feel that call to be the holy writer. You've got to trust that the divine, the one, the spirit, the source is real, is alive, and is speaking to you. And how do you trust? How do you get there? You just decide. That's it. You just say, I'm going to do it. I trust, and I know that it's safe, and I'm willing to turn everything off, step into myself, be alone with myself. I'm willing to create those three things Henri Nouwen speaks of: solitude, silence, and prayer. Do that. Do that. And you'll be the next holy writer. Here's David White. Let me leave you with David White. What to remember when waking. In that first, hardly noticed moment in which you wake, coming back to this life from the other, more secret, movable, and frighteningly honest world where everything began, there is a small opening into the day, which closes the moment you begin your plans. That's a perfect description of that lying in bed in Theta. What you can plan is too small for you to live. Now take that in. What you can plan is too small for you to live. What you can live wholeheartedly will make plans enough for the vitality hidden in your sleep. To be human is to become visible while carrying what is hidden as a gift to others. That's that coming out of the labyrinth with the gift. There you are, carrying the gift that you found in the silence, in the solitude. To remember the other world in this world is to live in your true inheritance. That's what we do as writers. We're remembering the other world, but we're in this world, and we're giving the gifts that we receive in that silence to this world. That's living our true inheritance. You are not a troubled guest on this earth. You are not an accident amidst other accidents. You were invited from another and greater night than the one from which you have just emerged. Now, looking through the slanting light of the morning window toward the mountain presence of everything that can be, what urgency calls you to your one love? What shape waits in the seed of you to grow and spread its branches against a future sky? Is it waiting in the fertile seed? In the trees beyond the house? In the life you can imagine for yourself? Or is it waiting in the open and lovely white page on your desk?
Janet, as always, your sharing is generous and very wise. Thank you so much for that.
Well, and thank you for giving me the opportunity.
I think
I'm soaring right now. I'm like, I'm on fire. You know, I'm so happy to be able to share. And I hope inspire people to enter into.
I think what you've also done is thrown down a challenge.
Well, that's true. That is true. Yeah, I thought it was important to talk about the price. The price, you know, not everybody wants to talk about the pretty stuff, the pretty stuff, the pretty stuff. And, of course, the pretty stuff lies in the deep stuff. You got to go deep. And so, yeah, it's a challenge, but I hope it's a holy challenge and an exciting one.
Well, I think you have stunned everybody because we have no questions. So I think there is so much in what you've just shared with us that we all have to go away and reflect and listen again and go on a media diet.
Yeah, before you go on your media diet, do listen to this. Yeah, and I do recommend, I find that anything that's meaningful to me, I have to reread it 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, 6 times. Anything that's important, I need to listen to over and over and over again. Because I think what's being activated is your left brain has to go to sleep. Your left conscious mind that's trying to, oh, I get it, oh, I get it, oh, I get it, oh, I get it. We've got to get that thing to shut up. We've got to get her to go to sleep. And so when a lot of information, when a lot of rich ideas are coming, boom, 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 boom. It does, the gift of it is it shuts that left conscious brain that can't take notes fast enough. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing because we want our right brain, our creative brain, our theta mind to enter into the truth.
Okay, so we have a space now till next week. Next week's classes are taking a different look at our creative lives. We're going to talk to Callie Carling, who shares her thoughts on creating art from the heart, and Emmy Award-winning musician Jim Oliver, who's going to talk about the role of healing music in our lives. And I've been listening to a lot of Jim's music over the past couple of months, and it has had quite a profound effect on me. I'd like to finish with a quote, and I know that this is one of Janet's favorite poets. It's Rainer Maria Rilke. And the quote goes like this: "It is good to be solitary, for solitude is difficult. That something is difficult must be a reason the more for us to do it."
Mm. I love Welcome.
So from Janet in Florida and me in Nottingham, goodbye and have a wonderful, reflective, creative week.
Thank you.